here that we've gotten into by over-leveraging, et cetera, are going to come back to haunt us. And that behavior change, like I say, the speculative phase is over. Those who think speculation is coming back, I mean, I appreciate that feeling. It's hard to get rid of what we've gone through in the last couple of years, but that's gone. And the spec money isn't coming back. People are going to batten down the hatches. People are going to move to a cash society. Now, that doesn't mean an absolute. Don't get me wrong.
Right.
There'll be some shrewd business people and others that will continue to flow on credit and things like that. But the average consumer is going to back away back to what our parents or grandparents had for an attitude of, if you can't pay cash, don't pay for it.
So the end of credit in that form. Tell me about this risk aversion just a bit. And I maybe you can talk about paper losses and actual losses and the difference. For instance, I had somebody today tell me, well, that he was out $45,000 for the week. And I'm wondering whether really he's out $45 or if it $45,000 or if it just looks like he's out $45,000 at this point.
Yeah, that's another great point. We have one of the things that, sometimes you'll hear too that we were, that we've often seen talk about where, oh, the stock market lost $1 trillion over X amount of time.
Right.
Well, if you had it on paper but never captured it, you never had it. So that, it was an artificial gain in the sense that it was real that you could have captured it had you liquidated a position. But on the flip side, it's only a paper gain until you capture it, and it's only a potential. So a lot of people haven't really lost anything they didn't have. Now, a lot of people have lost things that they were planning on,
right,
counting on. But even there, I would urge a lot of caution, calmness, let calmness prevail. In fact, I find that this has probably been one of my calmest times because I think I understand what's happening. And I do know that we'll see a lot of pain because of it around. But, most of the people, for example, if we're getting close to retirement or something and counting on stock market gains, we'll probably get a recovery. I mean, the recovery will come at some point in time. It may be a few years out. And very few people cash out their entire retirement plan in one shot. So, especially for my kids and even for myself with another, decade or so to go to retirement, I'm starting to look at this as a buying opportunity.
Well, I wondered about that, too. So let's talk about the pain to begin with. So the pain is only inflicted when you cash out, right?
On that degree, it is, yes. And the fact that, and it is just classic as you get older. I remember it while my mother was alive. The fear of insecurity that brings is probably the better pain. It's a perceived pain. More than the reality. Most of us are not going to end up out on the street, nor without being cared for. It's just that there's uncertainty whether it'll be there, and, it can be paralyzing. I often tell people, especially in presentations, I remember my grandmother, who was a young adult, late teen, young adult in the during the Depression, and how that scarred her so much, because she literally, her father would leave and work for a week, and sometimes they would literally go without food for 5 days. And she was a neat person, kept everything clean, but she never, ever threw anything away. And I can remember, I tell this story about how what it represents to people, that she would bring my, for Christmas every year while my dad was alive, it would be a $5 bill and a can of fruit. And that can of fruit meant so much. So what it had such a representation for my grandmother as to what it was for, because that represented security. So mankind goes through this cycle, and it usually takes about 3 generations to go through. But the bottom line is it starts with people being worried about making sure that they were secure, that they had enough food to make the year, had a roof over their heads and stuff like that. Then as they get a little bit more affluent, they build themselves up to being, they can store stuff. They build equity. Then as it gets too easy and people discover leveraging through borrowing, they get to the point where they're not even worried about their security, and that leads to rampant speculation. Now, the phase that builds up to rampant speculation, sometimes takes four or five decades, like we did from the 1930s to the rampant speculation we saw now. We thought we saw rampant speculation in the 1970s leading to 1980, but that was more so focused in one segment. This was widespread. And when that rampant speculation ends, it's amazing, as we're seeing right now, how fast that cycle can revert all the way back to fear for security. And that's what we're facing right now. We are, you know, and that behavior then becomes this, that's the pain that becomes inflicted on, again, even real or imagined, that people say, gee, I'm going to quit borrowing, I'm going to quit buying things I don't need. They'll focus on necessities, which means foods will do relatively well.
Right.
But that's not that encouraging if you own foods and somebody's office, real estate goes down by 90% and your foods go down by 50% that you're selling. So that doesn't mean things will be great, but it also means that that you will do relatively better being in agriculture, in my view.
Very quickly, recap what you saw in the reports this morning and how you would view all of that from the USDA perspective and what farmers can expect over the coming year or 2 years or 3 years or however long you want to go out.
Sure. First of all, I'm not primarily not a fundamentalist. However, I'm not sure whether trends and fundamentals count as technical or fundamentals. So, and I do care about the trends and the fundamentals. And I've been seeing since the start of the year, and I've been telling my local farm groups that at year end, the usage on corn, the usage in the start of the year would be way overstated compared to what it would be at the end of the year, and that things like the feed use of wheat would be higher as we would shift things. And these are the trends I've been seeing, but more importantly, the trends I've been seeing, what bothers me out there is that, for the most part, we've been seeing growing world carryovers over time. And in the recent weeks, we've seen the Brazilian real depreciate by 30%, meaning suddenly their soybeans are going to be a lot more competitive on the world markets again, right about the time they're getting ready to plant. So I think that'll stimulate supply down there. Long story short, I have a lot of cycle lows due, major ones, starting in later 2009, primarily in wheat, soybean meal, and running through late 2010, which would include corn and crude oil, and the CRB index as well. I expect a deflationary phase here to be pretty powerful from now through 2010. Even if we're into a relatively, a deflationary phase on the macro degree of the last two decades, it is not unheard of for prices to reach effectively the low of the band already in the first year or two of that phase, and then we start going into a trading range type behavior. And if we do, the years from 2010 on out for a decade or more, it could look a lot like we did in the 1980s and 1990s in agriculture.
Possibly.
Yes.
So I'm going to assume that the band is much higher up.
No.
No. So you're
assumption.
Wrong assumption.
Not a safe assumption. The problem
180 to 250?
Beans or corn?
Corn.
Okay. We may go all the way back to the lows, and here's why.
At 173 or 5.
Yeah, I'm afraid so. I got to be prepared for it. Whether it happens or not, I'm taking the stance, by the way, in public of the worst-case scenario because it's the one I have to protect against, and if everything turns out better, great. So with that said, the dollar index, and it's not the best measure of the dollar, but it's the most visible one, so I use that as an example.
Mm-hmm.
From the 2001-2002 double top to the low we made in March of this year, the dollar index declined by around figures 50 points. That's the equivalent of about 40% in the value of the index as an exchange item on the world. In that time, we saw tremendous inflation in our commodity prices. Now, it only takes, from making a low at 70 in the dollar index, it only takes a 35-point rally, which is, two-thirds of that decline.
You got 30 seconds at the moment.
Okay. And.
But we have 6 minutes after that. How about we finish this conversation in 2 minutes? What do you think?
That'd be great.
Okay, thanks much, Glenn. Glenn Ring is with Glenn Ring Enterprises. He's in Iowa and joins us here on the Harvest Hour edition of the Closing Market Report this afternoon. We'll talk more with him in just 2 minutes. I'm Todd Gleason.
Today's broadcast is made possible with support from Lincoln Square Village in Urbana, the same square with a new angle, now with shops, offices, activity, and dining facilities, including Pretty Nails and Mr. John's School of Cosmetology.
Here's what the weather forecast for the two-state region looks like from our own chief meteorologist, Ed Keezer. He says tonight's sky should be mostly clear. Lows will range from 45 in northeastern Indiana to 57 in the far south. Tomorrow, sunny skies. Highs will range from 72 in the far northeastern parts of Illinois to 86 in the far south. The extended forecast calls dry weather to continue right on through Sunday and Monday. The next chance of rain, says Ed, will come on Tuesday and Tuesday night as a cool front pushes through Illinois and Indiana. And dry weather should follow for about a day and a half before another round of showers is possible late next week. Warmer than average temperatures will continue through Monday, and then slightly cooler weather is expected during the middle of next week. It should perhaps be followed by another round of warmer than average weather. Starting during the weekend of October the 18th and the 19th, a freeze not expected through at least the 23rd of October. The latest model output continues to show near-freezing morning temperatures in the western Dakotas, Montana, and Wyoming Monday, and in the eastern Dakotas and western Minnesota on Tuesday. The outside of the far northwest, the Corn Belt, stays far away from a freeze threat through next week.
Today's programs are made possible with support from the Champaign-Urbana Tenant Union, helping people resolve housing problems for more than 30 years. The Tenant Union is a proud member of Community Shares of Illinois, a choice for payroll donation at work, on the web at cs-il.org.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. This is the Harvest Hour edition. Just about another 7 minutes to continue our discussion this afternoon with Glenn Ring about the financial markets, the commodity markets, and the future of it all. When we left him, he was taking up the subject of the dollar index. Can you continue on with that, please?
I can continue on. The point that I was making is the dollar index fell by about 40% in value from 2002 to 2007. And we have seen that's what led to this great inflation in commodity prices. That, and again, that was about a 40% decline or 50 points. Now, though, by declining to 70, if the dollar index were to make a 35-point rebound or about a two-thirds retracement, it would appreciate 50% in value. And so if the 40% decline sparked great inflation, there's every reason to believe that a 50% rebound in the dollar, 50% appreciation of the dollar, would cause great deflation. History says that's likely, and that certainly is what the action appears to be happening now. And here's what's incredible. Just since July, the dollar index has appreciated, as of today, 25% already. So that is a strong lead. When I was there in the March meeting, I showed, using gold as a proxy at that point, I showed how gold, how the dollar end, what happens to the dollar leads corn and bean prices. And if the dollar's going up, ag prices are coming down.
Right. So we've managed to push the dollar, and I didn't take a look at it. Is it still over 80 at this point?
Is
that right?
It's 82.64 the last trade.
And it was up something. 140 points a day. It was up 140 points. So you're suggesting that if we were to rally to 115?
105. That would be a 35-point gain. That would be a 50% appreciation of the dollar, and that would just that's what can send us all the way back to $2 corn, I'm afraid.
So the strong dollar in this case would not be good for the agricultural economy.
Right, but sadly, I don't think our nation has a choice. The alternative to the mess that we've been in right now is a total collapse of the currency system. And, I mean, these have happened. I've tracked this back to the time of Christ and how these grand cycles repeat. And I give right now the Fed and the Treasury an A-plus for the efforts they've made. I don't know that they're the right ones, but we know from history what the wrong ones are to do. No entity has ever saved a system from a collapse like this, and these guys have the best chance of anybody to keep us going. And if we can bleed off the excesses over a couple of decades, we will be better for it. Otherwise, our kids and grandkids will pay even worse.
If I remember correctly, in March you were talking about a true collapse somewhere under 70 for the dollar. Is that right, or was it lower?
If we broke out below 70, right, it would be a true collapse, and run the risk of and again, this is history. This is not my opinion. This is history of anarchy. You know, leading to an anarchy, leading to such a collapse in the currency, especially in a financial anarchy, if not a literal one, an anarchy in the currency system. And we saved it. It held right where it had to hold. And so far, so good. I mean, as far as that goes. So for our nation, for the long run, this is good. But I've been warning my customers here all year that, you know, a lot of them are pressured to buy next year's inputs, price those. And I've just been warning them, you absolutely don't buy next year's inputs if you didn't sell next year's crop. And, you know, we've been pushing to have 3 years worth of crop sold. Now, whether that's, you know, whether that's prudent now with the kind of declines, that becomes a touchy subject. But the bottom line, Todd, that I would tell people out here is the lesson I think they ought to take from this right now is when rallies come, and they will at some time, and I don't know if they'll get any higher than we are now, but when rallies come, they're going to have to sell them. You're going to sell rallies from now until 2010.
All rallies.
Say that one more time.
All rallies between now and 2010. You
for
want to produce
for purposes? Yes.
Right.
Yes.
So
yes.
The you need to be on the defensive posture then.
Absolutely.
Rather than and does this mean sell earlier rather than later in the years too?
Most likely. We're basically going to track it as it goes. I have another weekly cycle load due next March, so I'm expecting two sets of harvest pressure, one now, probably culminating as early as mid-November,
mm-hmm.
and then probably at least a flat market, maybe a recovery into the early winter, and then another harvest in March when that weekly load comes due. And especially for people that didn't sell a lot of grain or carrying a lot of inventory, I have a feeling banks are going to be pretty tough on their financing. You know, you're probably going to have to convert that grain to cash.
Right, so they're going to want the cash as opposed to credit, naturally. Okay, so I want to go back to one other issue. We've got, about 2 minutes left.
Okay.
Not quite that much at this point. Something you alluded to earlier, and I was thinking about earlier in the week, you said there might be some buys out there. What do you think is a buy in the stocks or other things at this point?
Sure. I'm looking now, Todd, to buy companies, not stocks. And what I mean by that is, I think we're back to where we can do value buying, where you look at, you know, price-earnings ratios. I'm watching some that are down around 3.5 to 4 already and stuff like that. And I'm looking still for things that handle natural resources. Oh, things like, say, pipeline companies that transport energies and things like that. Service-related in the commodity field, I like those things long-term.